Good afternoon. As always, they gave me the first session after lunch, you know, kind of. Who's jet lagged here? Yeah. Actually, I want to do a few show of hands, but before I do that, let me introduce myself and we'll also ask Rui to say a few words. So I'm part of the product group. I've been with Link for the past 10 years. And prior to that, I have a background in telecommunication, voice over IP at Level 3 and a few other places. And I'm kind of a jack of all trades. I work with our strategic customers from the product group. So my role is to make sure that as you deploy, we help you optimize your strategies, your technical strategies, and also that we learn from what you do. So if you fall on your face, if you learn something useful, we can then try and avoid that, you know, other people do the same. And we can hopefully fix the product as well. So what we're going to talk about today is actually something that came out of that process. A long time ago, we started getting feedback from customers on that topic. But before I go into that, Rui.
Thank you, Francois. My name is Rui Maximo. I'm with Link Solutions. So I've been in Microsoft a long time, and now with Link Solutions. So.
And we'll know more about Rui a little bit later. He has the interesting part of the presentation at the very end.
So you better stay around.
So who among you uses Link 2010 or Link 2013 as a core platform? Not necessarily for everything, but OK. Please keep your hands up. If you don't have Link Mobile deployed today, please remove your hand. OK. Please put your hands down. Who has been struggling with their security department or with themselves in terms of deploying Link with respect to security? Yeah? Okay. I think we're going to have an interesting debate today. So as I was mentioning earlier, about a couple of years ago, we started hearing from customers that they were struggling with Link Mobile and that in some cases they were blocked with respect to how Link Mobile authenticated or with respect to some of the security processes attached to Link Mobile. So what we'll do today is we'll tell you what we have done in that regard. Hopefully we've done enough to unblock most of you. There might be situations where we may not have done enough yet, and one of the things that we'll look at is what partner solutions can do to further close that gap, and in particular what Rui does. So we'll start with a brief review of what we used to do in Link Mobile from an authentication point of view. Review those improvements that we've done recently. We might also talk about some other things that we typically hear from customers, you know, MDM or not MDM, those type of things, and other type of common requests. And then the interesting portion of the session is what Rui will do, which is taking us through some incremental capabilities that partners can bring to this domain. Hopefully we'll reserve a lot of time for Q&As. That said, I'm very happy to have questions in the flow as well. That's very fine. Let's not necessarily wait till the very end if you're, you know, blocked or not understanding something, or if we are not meeting your need, let me know in advance. But please, because those are recorded, come to a microphone. Or I'll repeat them. Until kind of the fall of 2013, authentication in Link was not necessarily what we would have desired for it to be. In Link Mobile, there's actually two servers that we authenticate against. We need to get things from Link Server, and we need to get things from Exchange Web Services. And both of those, the only option that we provided was username password. And because of the way it was done, frequent reauthentication, you would typically find the user credentials cached and saved on the device, not just in memory, but on the physical device on a permanent basis, so that if the device was lost, stolen, misplaced, or whatever, people would have the credentials there. In a manner that I can certainly understand, a few customers told us that was not entirely acceptable to them. Who was in that camp at that time? Only one? Oh, a few more hands. You're too shy. We know there's many more hands. So essentially, Link Mobile to make it short, only supported in TLM. We had customers who used username password but didn't want to use it all the time and to have it remain on the device. And we had some customers, including some in the room here, who actually don't have passwords. They don't know their passwords, and that was another complexity. Yeah? Oh, you're not the only one. This is kind of the way the flow was going. I'm not necessarily going to spend a huge amount of time on those flows, but at least you'll have them in reference in the deck. But the way Link works is it actually obtains a web ticket and then uses the web ticket for 8 hours. So the way you get the web ticket is, you know, essentially you're being told by the server you need a web ticket when you post. You request a web ticket with NTLM and then get the web ticket, and that web ticket is used for authorization by the server. This will repeat as often as necessary during 8 hours, as long as the web ticket's valid. So if you reboot the device or whatever, that's what's going to happen. But after 8 hours, you would need to put your password in again. Now, if you were using the Exchange Web Services, and I will detail a bit more what we do with that, then every query, literally every query, required that you would submit your credentials. Very few users were patient enough to enter those credentials every time, and so they ticked the box, save my credentials, and you had no control over that because we gave you no policy, no control over that. So altogether, that was not ideal. So what we did, based on the feedback that you provided, that a large number of customers provided, is we substantially improved the authentication capabilities in Link Mobile. This is currently something that's available, was released in fall 2013 for Windows Phone, iPhone, and iPad. Unfortunately, we're a little behind on Android. That's not by design. We absolutely are committed to Android as a platform as well, and we want to be at the same level of release across all platforms. It's not because we are, you know, evil. We might also be evil, but that's not because we're evil that we don't have Android at the same level. It's just a circumstantial thing. It's coming. It's coming soon. Can't give you any sort of date because we're not in an NDA event here and so on, but we might chat about things later. This is an on-prem thing only. Link Online functions differently. And actually, to some extent, Link Online, again, without saying future-oriented things and things that would be under NDA, but could represent or, you know, give you an idea of what eventually we might do in on-prem as well. But in the short term and for the time being, what you're going to see is what exists in Link 2013 on virtually all platforms and what will exist for a little bit more time. We have 4, 5, 6 seats, 7, 8 seats here, 2 or 3 here as well. So what did we do? Our key goal was to reduce the exposure to AD credentials, username password. There was a secondary goal, which was to provide alternative to AD credentials to username password. And we did that in two main components. There's one component for initial authentication, one time that happens, you know, maybe every few weeks or every few months or whatever. And then there's a component for something that happens every time you re-authenticate. So for example, every 8 hours or something like that, every time you need a new web ticket. With respect to that initial authentication, you can still do NTLM, and we'll talk a little bit more about how that works. But what we've done is we've added policies, and I will detail those in a second, so that you can actually say, yes, we do NTLM, but it's a transient NTLM. Nothing's going to be stored on the device. Nothing's going to be remanent. And a large number of customers seem to be okay with that, and that's fine. For customers who are not okay with that, we have another approach, which is called passive authentication, which I will also detail for you in a second. The best way to think of passive authentication is that the Link server is no longer in the authentication business. What it does is it trusts authentication that comes from something else. So far, every product at Microsoft, every client-server product at Microsoft, has had PMs and developers that were writing codes that was essentially devoted to authentication. So you had people in Exchange, people in SharePoint, people in Link, and so on, doing the same work, replicating it, typically not exactly the same way, so that was always simple. Organizational aspects, that would do the same thing, would authenticate. And then they would have different scope. You know, in Link, we did Kerberos and TLM and a few other things. In Exchange, they might have done a few other things and more, and so on and so on. Over time, our strategy is to move away from each server being in the business of authentication and having things that actually do that very well, that are dedicated to that goal, provide that authentication. That's also something that's very consistent with a long-term online approach, where you could actually consume online services from a range of even providers, not just Microsoft, and the authentication would be something that you obtain, that you obtain from another provider, and there is a trusted relationship, and you present a token. So that passive authentication, I'll give you quite a bit more detail in a second, but think of it as that first step where you're actually saying, Link, do not authenticate anymore, please. Just accept a token on my behalf, and we'll call it quits. Unfortunately, at this point in time, we don't have a similar solution for Exchange Web Services. So if you want to continue using Exchange Web Services in Link Mobile, every query, you'll have to present credentials. This is a transitory situation. We certainly have ideas around that and plans and so on. I cannot, again, because of the setting, tell you more about this at this point. But for now, what we'll show you is new capabilities and policies that we've introduced that you could actually use to remove the Exchange Web Services capabilities from the Link Mobile client. Not perfect, but at least it takes care of the, you know, I don't want to have the credentials go back and forth all the time.
So basically, if you remove EWS, you don't have calendar.
You're going to see that in a second. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Correct. So let's talk a little bit about the second part of that two-phased approach, which is the subsequent authentication. The reason I start with that is because it's actually the one that's most used. It's used all the time. You know, hopefully one time is used kind of one time. And the recurring authentication happens all the time. Well, hopefully all of you have been using it for a long time. We've had this capability of link-based certificate authentication in Link for at least since Link 2010. Was it before even? Possibly. And it's something that the Link PC client has been using. But we didn't have that in the Link Mobile client. So what we essentially did here is bring the Link Mobile client at the same level as the PC client from the point of view of using the Link certificate. We have a service on the front end that is called the certificate provisioning service, and we'll look at the flows in a second, that provides that certificate once you've essentially appropriately authenticated, obtained the appropriate web ticket. And that Link certificate is going to be used on a recurring basis, again, to obtain the web ticket, because what you really want is the web ticket, but the web ticket only lasts for 8 hours. In as much as we can tell, it's a very secure approach. It's a proven model. It's something that we've done for a long time, something that's very broadly used on a variety of clients. One of the advantages that it has is that the certificate is not part of your CA, your corporate CA, certificate authority. It's actually created and distributed by Link Server. So the rights that it can confer are scoped to Link Server at most. There is absolutely no way that that certificate could ever be used to obtain access to your corporate network, for example, because just different certificate authority. So to the extent that certificate would ever be compromised, the exposure is reduced. We also try and do our best to limit the exposure from the point of view of where it's stored. So it's stored securely on the device in a manner that is not accessible to other applications. Now, we all know that those devices typically have some element of fragility. If they are in somebody's hands for 10 minutes or more, typically you can consider they're compromised. And that means that the certificate might be compromised as well, even though we try to make it non-exportable and those kind of things. Nothing's ever impossible, yeah? So we're not completely dealing with everything that could ever happen, but what's the worst exposure at that point? It's that people could obtain access to Link. And what could we do at that point if people obtained access to Link? Well, you can revoke the certificate, which would prevent people from using it. Now, because there is the web ticket, the revocation would not necessarily sign people out instantly. It might take a few, you know, few hours. So if you really wanted to sign people, to re-nuke people, you probably would need to unprovision the user, disable the user. That's the term I was looking for, thank you. It's probably written behind me as well. disabling the user would be the appropriate way. There's a number of things that we've verified. So for example, if you were to sign out, or if you were signed out by the server, you need to start the process again. You need to go back and do your one-time authentication again. And if you were to upgrade Link Mobile, which happens every few months or so, then you need to go back and redo the cycle again. Same thing if you delete the client and reinstall it. You can manage the lifetime of the certificate, as is also the case for the one on the PC. It's actually, as far as I remember, a single policy for both, so you would have the same duration for both. So that's the primary change that we've made, which is that instead of having every 8 hours credentials, AD credentials being sent over the wire, and probably as a consequence stored on the device, what will happen is TLS DSK-based authentication where that certificate is being used, and hopefully for most of the many months of use of that client, you will never have to put credentials again. Unless your admin decides that, you know what, hygiene procedure, we need to revoke the certificates every so often, make sure that we force people back in and so on, which is absolutely fine as well. So how do you get that certificate? Well, remember, we already done the one-time authentication here. This is about recurring authentication, yep? So once you've done this one-time authentication, which we're going to talk about now, which we're going to detail how you arrive here, you've received a web ticket. You're going to use that web ticket to authenticate to a server and also to request a certificate from the CPS, the certificate provisioning service, okay? And after that, if you need to renew the web ticket, you do it with the certificate, update the web ticket every 8 hours or so. If you restart the device and your web ticket's valid, that's what you're going to present in all likelihood. Okay? Good so far? We still have probably about a dozen seats available here. Cheap seats, yeah? Better? So let's talk a little bit about initial authentication. By the way, we completely forgot to push the button. That was your job.
Was it my job?
How much time do we still have? We probably want to kind of catch up on that.
We still have about an hour.
You want to do the kind of 57 minutes and counting? Thank you. So you can still use NTLM for your initial authentication. Most customers use NTLM today for external PC authentication. May or may not be perfect, and we can all understand NTLM is far from perfect. But fact of life, many of them do it today. For example, you do, yeah? Yep. Designated victim here. We didn't arrange this in advance, but I do know that you do it. So there is no reason why you couldn't use Link Mobile in the same way, you know, and use NTLM, not store the credentials, that might be very appropriate, but just do that one-time thing. And then you use this to obtain the web ticket from the web ticket service. So essentially the way it works is, post, need the web ticket, you request the web ticket again with NTLM, but this one will not be stored, get the web ticket. That's just one time, possibly for months, possibly for weeks, depends a little bit on how it's going to work. And then every time you need to go back to a server to re-authenticate and get a session, you're going to get the web ticket during the first 8 hours. And then after that, you're going to use the certificate which you've obtained, as we discussed before, to redo this thing. What else do we do to protect your AD credentials if you use NTLM? So I alluded to that. We have a new admin policy that is going to enable you to prevent your users from storing their password. And if you were to use that policy and people already have it stored, it actually forces the removal of it. So you can actually go back and apply the policy now, and it's actually going to do what it's supposed to do, even for users who already stored it. The second thing is those DOM Exchange Web Services capabilities that, unfortunately, we don't have any choice. And if you don't want to let people authenticate every few hours, then you can use those new policies to remove those capabilities. And as you were pointing out, essentially that means that you don't have voicemail and meetings. And to the extent there is unified contact store capabilities, that's the third one that depends on Exchange Web Services. So your contacts may not be accessible anymore. Now, your contacts you might have on your mobile device anyway from other sources. Your meetings, you probably already have in Calendar. And if you have voicemails on Exchange UM, you probably have them in email as well. So is it convenient? Not. But is it the end of the world? Probably not either. Again, we want to solve that over time. This is an interim situation. Most customers that we've discussed this with actually want to apply those policies. Essentially, a low exchange connectivity false. And once we have solved that problem, they'll re-enable it. So that's the portion of initial authentication that would be done using NTLM credentials. So we've already, yes, please. Absolutely. So, perfect transition. Thank you very much. That's just what I needed, because we're going to talk about the other way. But just before I do that, just wanted to make sure that I summarize where we are. So what we discussed so far, we discussed new capabilities where we have dissociated initial authentication and recurring authentication. The recurring authentication is going to be done with the link certificates, in the same way that we do it on the PC today. Every time that you come back and your web ticket's no longer valid, needs to be renewed, you're going to do that with the certificate, unless or until the certificate's no longer valid, has been revoked or whatever. The initial authentication can be done in two manners, and we've already looked at the NTLM approach. And we're now going to look at the other approach, which is Link gets out of the authentication business, aka passive authentication. So passive authentication is really different from the other ways that we do authentication, because essentially we don't do authentication in it. So we're going to spend a little bit more time on it and look at the flows in detail and so on. We actually introduced that quietly in, I think, January 2013. We had a number of, in particular, defense customers who were interested in that. And we introduced it initially only for PC clients. So the PC client in January or thereabouts was modified towards that. It's a server thing as well. And those few customers were really interested in that for very specific purpose. One of the applications that they had is situations where you have users in a forest and link or applications in another and no trust in between. Not easy to do traditional authentication in that situation. So you can actually do that delegated authentication, delegate to something that authenticates in a trusted forest. So what is passive authentication? Again, we get out of the authentication business. There is something called a security token service, which could be a DFS, and typically that's the one that we've worked against and that we've tested against and that we've optimized against and that we officially support. But conceptually, any STS that does their job right could do this. We just don't document it in detail, and that would have to be supported by a third party. Yeah? So let's call it a DFS if we want, but what it really is an STS. Link delegates authentication to that STS. The STS is going to serve a custom page, and we're going to show you what that looks like in a very short amount of time for people who are more visual. That custom page is what we call a Trident page. It's essentially a web page, but it's not a free web page. It's a web page inside the application or controlled by the application and rendered by the application. Because it's rendered within the application, it doesn't have access to a lot of things at the device level. So the type of authentication that it's going to support is forms-based, which doesn't necessarily lend itself very easily to, you know, using a smart card. For one thing, there's very few smart card readers on those things, but also doesn't have hardware-level connectivity. And that's important from a security point of view as well. So we have not opened up the application to, for example, reading a USB-connected smart card device or anything like that. It's going to take forms-based input. Now, that forms-based can be multi-factor. It can actually be whatever you want. I could just say, you know, type one, you type one, and that's good, or enter return. We at Microsoft essentially no longer care about how secure or not secure your implementation is going to be. It's yours. We're no longer going to be looking at other challenges, you know, one factor, two factors, 78 factors, I don't care. That's for you to decide and for you to implement, or for your partner, in that forms-based manner. Once that authentication has been done in a manner that satisfies you, the STS is going to pass a token back to the link client. And the link client is going to take that token and present it to the link server, which has a trust relationship with the STS, so can trust that token and can say, okay, you're authenticated by that other guy, I trust you, I authorize you to use link. Interesting change of terms. We're no longer in the authentication business. We just authorize the user, based on the trust, to use link resources. Questions so far? We're going to see a lot of flows and diagrams and examples in a few seconds. So, yeah, good. So one of the complexities we have with this is, how do I know that I should use passive authentication if I'm a client, if I'm a link client? Well, that's kind of tricky. What's going on there? That's kind of tricky because the client cannot actually know what the authentication policies are for that user until the client has actually authenticated. Yeah? The client has hardwired a range of authentication mechanisms that it can support. There's about six of them, and there is a specific prescribed order. That prescribed order has to be hardwired. The reason for that is I'm trying this one first, then that one, and then maybe eventually that's the one that's going to go. For example, NTLM is not preferred in most cases. Yeah, NTLM is rather low on the list. You would rather do Kerberos than NTLM in most cases if you can, and so on and so on. And there's other things you would rather do. Well, passive auth is relatively low on the list. And there's a number of reasons for that, but one of them is that it's relatively recent and complex. And so if we put it at the top of the list, that might actually create a lot of disruptions for our existing customers who've deployed otherwise. So telling the client that it must use passive authentication is actually a fairly difficult thing. So we need to do a lot of things on the server side so that the server would know that the pool in question has been set up and the users that belong to that pool have been set up to use passive auth. One of the impacts is that today, you know, until we figure it out a little bit differently, but today you must do the entire pool, and you must do all the clients for all the users on that pool. This is not kind of a, you know, halfway pregnant thing. We'll talk a little bit more about that, because while it's a very useful capability, and actually it's probably something that illustrates the way of the future for authentication, in the short term, it's a relatively impactful one that if you want to explore, you need to remap how you go there very carefully. And it also means that if you can use NTLM and you're able to be comfortable with what we do with NTLM with that one-time thing, it's not necessarily a bad idea to use it, using the policies to disable storage and so on. So just because we've introduced passive auth doesn't mean you should do it. Yeah? As you enable passive hosts, since Kerberos and NTLM are high on the list, you want to disable those. And you do that on the server for the pool. And again, that will impact everything that touches the pool. Oh, we have a movie. Do I know how to play the movie? Oh, yes. There is no sound. So this is just a demo. Why do we have a demo that's canned? I'll tell you in a second. But first, let's look at what it does. So this is a normal link client. We actually took it on the PC client just because it's a little bit easier when the mouse was not captured right. So you see that prompt? That's the Trident page. That Trident page I can authenticate in. In this case, guess what? I'm putting username password. Why? Because we're using ADFS2 on this one, and that's pretty much all that ADFS2 can do today. ADFS3 has more capabilities. So you've seen an authentication this way. We'll replay it in a second. But first, apologies for doing a canned demo. But our lab is in Rui's place somewhere in Washington State. And we're going to show you later, hopefully, NTLM-based authentication, reconfiguring from NTLM from passive host to NTLM. It's a little bit risky, can take a little bit of time, and we decided not to do both demos live. So we took this movie a little bit earlier today. But what you saw is just credentials being entered in a Trident page. Here, I just need my CPRI, not inputting anything else. For some reason, the mouse is upset. And here I put my credentials against whatever challenge the STS wants to issue to me. That specific challenge happens to be username password. Kind of weird to do all of this to eventually do username password, but it's an option. And it could be anything else that you wanted. You know, what's your birthday or whatever? What's the name of your dog? Also, do you have a one-time password, or do you have a number of other criteria that could be uniquely known? On a mobile client, this is what it looks like. Same thing. Put your CPRI. Now, the password field could show in some cases. If it does show, you don't need to put anything in there. It's good if you don't have a password. You actually should not put anything in there. But because we don't know in advance what methodology you're going to use, because we have no way until authentication has been done to know you want to do passive hosts, we can't really prevent that password field from being there. If people were to put a password in there, it's going to go through the wire, but we're not going to do anything with it. It's going to be ignored. So same thing, you have the Trident page. In this case, it's actually rendered really within the same window, whereas earlier you saw the Link PC client, it was a pop-up window. But in both cases, it's a web page that's controlled by the application with the same type of forms. Now here we're cute. We're actually using a slightly different format of username to show you that you could actually do those type of things using passive hosts, where you actually have other types of, you know, not just CPRI, but you could actually, in this case, have a domain slash or backslash username. And same thing, very spectacular, it's a sign-in, just works. So that's what the users do and see. What happens in the back? So user enter the CPRI, and Link Mobile is going to perform, as usual, the auto-discover. Again, if they wanted to input a password here, there's really not much that we can do to prevent them from doing it, but it's not going to be used. And it's going to travel in TLS. If they don't have a password, that's even simpler. So once the auto-discover has been done, we now are able to hit the server, the Link server. And the Link server is going to say, oh, you want to go to that pool? That pool has been set up to use passive hosts, and I have this trust relationship with that guy there, so I'm going to redirect you to the STS. The STS says, oh, I know you, I trust you, I can serve the Trident page to you. And that Trident page is actually served to Link Mobile, which renders it. At that point, the user sees that and is going to input whatever is asked of them, again, it's forms, which is then sent back to the STS. The STS is going to authenticate the user and provide the token back to the Link mobile client, which then is going to use the token to present it to Link server, which hopefully is going to trust the token and say, you can use it. And here's a web ticket for you. Yes?
So is there a feedback mechanism so that obviously this is the first time you sign in, so if there's another time in which you need to sign back in, then there's a feedback so that the password field is not there anymore?
So the question is, if you do this once, and then you're using the same client, you've not like destroyed it or whatever, kind of upgraded it, removed it, yeah? Would the client know and not show you the password field? Actually, yes. Now, that cannot be foolproof because there could be situations where, let's say you could have re-authenticated to a different server that would not be tuned for passive OAuth, and then you have the password field again or whatever. But generally speaking, we're trying to make that work. And actually, if you go back to this is actually exactly what happened. No password field here. I could show you that if I wanted to do it with the iPad right now on a fresh authentication, the password field would likely show up. Whereas here, I suspect that Rui, when he took those specific screenshots, had already done it before. Yes, sir. May I ask you to hold on to that question for a little bit, because that's a part of a discussion that we're going to have in probably about 10 minutes, okay? What I will just say right now on this is the way Link is designed is it authenticates users, not devices. And we'll go a little bit further on that in a second. Okay, so that's the path for passive OAuth, the flow chart. And if you want to look at the protocol exchanges, you know, again, you do the post, need the web ticket, request the web ticket. Oh, you're on a pool that requires passive OAuth. Let me redirect you to the STS, the FS. And once that's done, once that mysterious thing is done, you can come back with the DFS token to the client. Request a web ticket with the token, get the web ticket, and then everything as before. So if you wanted to set up passive OAuth, what would you need to do? Not going to go into great detail on that right now because there's actually fairly good blogs from my friend Jens Truel Rasmussen that's listed here that details that. It's also well documented. Frankly, it's not that simple, but absolutely feasible. The main aspect is that you're now in the business of determining for yourself what type of challenge you're going to issue to your users. And you can decide to make it as simple or as complicated as you want. There are partners who actually want to encapsulate that for you so that you don't have to deal with all of that complexity, but you could do it yourself if you wanted to. Remember that it affects your entire pool, all of your users on that pool, and all the clients of those users. Please also remember that there are clients that we actually today don't support with passive OAuth yet. We are bad, you know, we know it. We should kind of have all of them at the same point, but we're not there yet. So for example, our VDI clients don't support it today. Our Link Room System clients don't support it today. Our Link Phone Edition clients don't support it today, and so on and so on. So there's a bunch of them that don't support it today. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. How does it affect the external meeting? Well, from an anonymous join point of view, there is no change there. Now, federation is not affected either. So if you're joining federated, no change. If you're joining as a guest, no change. It's just if I want to authenticate as a user of this company on that pool, the first time I authenticate, I'm going to be issued that type of challenge. But it's not really meeting specific, yeah? Can you speak a little bit louder or go to the microphone? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yeah, so the question is, what happens for, if you want to use passive host, what happens for the other clients, for the desktop clients? So that's what I showed you a little bit earlier. This is actually, sorry, kind of going back. If you remember this, this is actually on the PC client on the desktop. So this is exactly what happens on the desktop. This is a desktop client. Yes, yes. And not all clients that we publish have that capability yet. Hey, being transparent.
So if you go and you enable this, then your current Windows users that don't get challenged when they log in, they're going to now get challenged?
Correct. Well, but that's a one-time thing. Remember, that's a one-time thing. Then you have the certificate. You can actually set up your certificate so that it renews itself. Yes, there will be challenged as a one-time situation. Again, that's part of the principle. You want Link to get out of the business of authentication if you do that. So bottom line, if you have other mechanisms, again, NTLM is not that bad if you use it one time and you don't store the credentials. So I mentioned that several times. The message here is, if you have to use passive OAuth, use passive OAuth. It works. There are still some rough edges. You might need the use of a the help of a partner in setting it up because it's, you know, a little bit rich, and you might want to pay a lot of attention to clients that don't yet have it fully. We're continuing to work on this. We're aware of the gaps. Please make us even more aware. That's absolutely fair. But it's usable, and we have customers now using it. Before I switch gears, any other question on that section? We're going to start talking about other questions that typically I hear a lot of. Okay. So I think you were asking me that one earlier in different ways, but essentially a lot of customers like to control which device and set up the device and have something on the device, MDM, AM, MEM, whatever, to manage what happens there. I understand that. I understand why. You know, concerns about impersonation, concerns about data security. Those concerns typically came from the email space and from applications that were not secure. But now people have deployed the MDM and they want to use it. Sometimes the main reason is the third one, sometimes there's actually a very solid reason behind it. Yeah, I'll see. So what do we do? Well, we don't support MDMs or MAMs. We don't deploy devices in that manner. I can go into the why and so on, but eventually it doesn't even matter. We don't. You know, I could try and sweet talk you into making sure you're convinced we're doing the right thing. You may or may not agree with me. It's not there, so what can we do? Well, we believe it's our responsibility to have a secure application. Rather than having you buy something else that compensates for the weakness of the OS and the application. I also happen to believe that an MDM is illusory security, because if I put my hands on a device that has an MDM on it, and I have a quiet 5 to 10 minutes, everything that's on it is also mine. Same, you know, no difference. Only if you get the report very, very quickly and you actually have the opportunity to act on it very quickly before it's taken off the network and so on, does the MDM re-add value from that point of view, from the point of view of security. It adds value from the management point of view in some ways, but not necessarily from the security point of view. So our responsibility is to try and be as secure as we can. Are we perfect? No. We've progressed quite a bit and we're continuing to invest in this. And same here, we want you to keep us honest and give us feedback and beat us up where we are not good enough. Oh, that one, I should actually have put that slide earlier because that's pretty, oh yes, on the previous slide, I'm pretty sure, yep. Well, that's a very good question. So, you know, essentially customers are in the mindset, I'm pretty sure, actually we should do a show of hands. Whose company uses MDM today and makes it compulsory on the devices? Yeah, a lot of people, yeah. And typically that came from email, yeah. And email, there's a lot of data, very different. Link, there's very little data. And you can actually make it that almost no data, and we'll talk about that in a second, yeah? So data is an issue, impersonation is another issue. What can you do and what would you, how would you act if there was impersonation? Data, device loss, and you want to protect against impersonation. At the end of the day, there is no good answer to your question because I could argue that thing from both sides. The point is we have decided we're not going to do this. We're not going to distribute through MDMs. There's many complexities attached to that, especially in a fast innovation type of situation. You get not one SKU, but you get like 18, 20 different SKUs because there's so many MDMs and you need to essentially either recompile your app on their APIs or give them unsigned builds, which from a security point of view, you can just imagine how simple that is. I mean, there's a lot of things like this that make it complicated. And the management of all those SKUs and then the frequent upgrades that we have every 2-3 months or so. It's just, we just couldn't do this and debug it and maintain it and sustain it. We've decided not to do it. Is this a good choice? Well, that's complicated. You know, I can certainly see the other part of the equation. I've already done this. I already have all of my applications there. I would want this one to also be there. Completely understand. But it's not something that we're doing. So counterpart to this, what must we do to convince you to use Link Mobile in that setting? It needs to be secure on. There's essentially three things people mention. One is the hygiene piece, which is you know, viruses. Are you going to bring viruses to my network through this? There is no known attack vector today that you know you could plug in that manner. Clearly, if that was the case, we would actively work on it. The second one is impersonation. I found the device. Well, it's not very different from I found your BlackBerry, it rings, and I pick it up, yeah? What we can do, we can revoke the cert. We can disable the user, and so on. So we give control over that. And the third element is data security. What type of data do I have there? And I'm going to talk about that in a second. Is it a perfect answer? No, but that's the best we have today. And again, we're taking the challenge. We must convince our customer that we're secure enough in the way we do it. Eventually, I think nobody really wants to continue paying for MDMs. You would want secure platforms and secure applications. So what we're doing, we think is the right strategic path, but it's a difficult one. Nope. And you could consider that if there was a way, that would actually be a very insecure thing, yeah? So let me move on a little bit from the MDM discussion. There's no good answer to it. Let's reserve this one for the end, if you don't mind, just in the interest of time. So other frequent questions. I covered this one, so I'm not going to go back to it. Just know that it's in the slide deck. Should I use passive authentication because it's there? Well, again, just my opinion here. It's complicated, and it's not without impact on other aspects. So if you have to use it, for example, you have no passwords. Well, you might not have a choice. It works. It's feasible, but it's complicated. If you are okay with using NTLM one time, you might want to continue doing that. And you might actually want to look for value-added third parties that protect you further on NTLM, as we're going to see that very shortly. So that data security piece that I was alluding to, there's two components of UZ. There is a data transfer piece. I don't think people have much concern about the data transfer with Link Mobile. We all know authenticated encryption, so on the encryption grade is not very different from what you would do with other encapsulation methods. That's typically not the one that people are concerned with. The data at rest, well, essentially, what's the data at rest on the device? Your list of meetings for the next day or two, and your, excuse me, and your conversation history where you have about 100 conversations listed there. There is no address book. So you could actually decide to turn off a lot of those things, and there are policies for most of those things. And to the extent we don't have enough, you know, again, beat us up and we can try and see if we can improve. But that's, the amount of data that's there is actually very, very restricted. Add content that the exposure is not, is actually much lower than what you have with your email within an MDM. If a bad guy puts their hands on your device with the MDM and the email there, you have much more concern with that. Another requirement that we hear a lot of, by the way, is pre-authorization in DMZ. The idea is we've always had this where things coming from the outside would be terminated in the DMZ, authorized in the DMZ, and then forwarded inside. And as we all know, Link doesn't work like this. Link goes through the DMZ and goes through IS on the front ends or, you know, the appropriate services there, but typically IS, and that's where we're going to do things. So we're quite different there. This is not going to change drastically the way, you know, we function. So we have customers who, whom we can convince that we do it right. And essentially the rationale behind that is threats from the inside are pretty much as bad as threats from the outside. There's probably fewer, but they're pretty much as bad and sometimes worse because they know what they're doing. So we think we need to secure our servers against threats from the inside or the outside in the same way. Doesn't really matter that much. There's some differences, subtle differences, of course, you know, not to be neglected in terms of mass attacks and so on. And that's where third-party solutions can come in and add a lot of value. But adding authorization DMZ from our point of view doesn't buy you that much more because your guys from the inside or a corrupt device will give you all those issues anyway. Device-specific restriction, that goes back to your point, but a lot of people, independently of the MDM discussion, say, I don't want people to use on a variety of devices. There's too many proliferation. I want an inventory. Again, we don't do that. We don't have today a way to unearth things, for example, such as workplace join. That's a very good idea, and it might be in the future that those things change, that we have more ways to unearth things that are device-specific, but today we don't have that. So if you're interested in those type of capabilities, that's where third-party solutions can help you. Okay? So that's actually where the more interesting part of the talk comes up. You ready? So we're going to talk a little bit about what third-party solutions can add to what I described for you, in particular along the lines of pre-authorization DMZ, trying to understand what device your users are using and restrict things around which device users are using, and protection, further protection of NTLM to the extent you agree to use NTLM for one time, but you're concerned about exposing it and you're concerned about denial of service, those type of things.
Great. Thank you, François. Hope you enjoyed François's
talk.
You have
no slides, actually, by the way. That's not what you need.
Don't you say I have some slides in there?
Oh, yes, you have slides. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
So I'll go through those slides. So just to reintroduce myself, my name is Rui Maximo. Started Link Solutions in 2009. I'm an ex-Microsoft veteran. Been at Microsoft 17 years. Worked on Link since 2003. So I've seen all of the versions of the product. Wrote 5 books on the products as well. And some of those posters that you guys are carrying around, I was the author of that. So I'm glad to see that you guys are liking it. So that's just a little bit about me and about the company. Our products, we focus exclusively on security, on Link security specifically. So we don't do anything else. We're not in the consulting business. We just do products that specifically address security needs that you may have for Link. We have our products are deployed at over 100 customers. In fact, one of our customers that was here early today presenting. It was Cargill, and they have our product in place, so they're very happy with it. So I'm glad that all went well. So that's just a little bit about myself and the company. So Link Solutions, our security products is called the Security Filter. So it's the product line that we have. It's a modular security solution. It protects against denial service attacks and by intercepting traffic at the DMZ. And this is both at the edge server, which is the SIP traffic, as well as the HTTPS traffic at your reverse proxy, because there's also traffic coming through there. Depending on the type of client, for example, the Link Mobile Link client, Link 2013 client, your desktop client, authenticates both through your HTTPS traffic as well as your SIP traffic. So it'll connect through both. But your Link Mobile client will connect exclusively through your reverse proxy, as well as if you go to any of the simple URLs that require authentication, like dial-in. I'll show that to you in a minute. They have the ability to do user-device affinity, so we'll know which device you're connecting from. And we can block or allow that particular instance of Link Mobile client that's connecting. And we also have logging and monitoring and alarming at the DMZ layer. So there's no components that we have that are required to be installed inside your corporate network. Everything is at your network perimeter. Because we feel that as a security no-no, it's not good for any components in your DMZ to reach inside your corporate network. So we try to do everything at the DMZ layer. So it doesn't require any Active Directory access or anything like that. So just to illustrate as a visual of what this would look like, if you deploy Link externally, you would need an edge server and you would need a reverse proxy in order to have all the capabilities, including Link Mobile Client. And so a hacker, if your users can connect to your Link servers externally, that means anybody can connect from your, to your Link environment as well. So a hacker could attack your edge server, or it could attack your reverse proxy, or attack both of them in any case. And so when an authentication request comes in, it'll come through, and the reverse proxy or the edge server, they actually don't perform any authentication, right? The request comes in, it actually reaches all the way into your Link pool, and your Link pool will actually, or your Link server here, your internal front-end servers, will perform the authentication against Active Directory in the case of NTLM. That takes up a lot of resources in terms of handling the authentication requests, and possibly the side effect of this is that your user accounts inside Active Directory could get locked out if you have that lockout policy turned on. So to prevent that, our solutions here, we have two products, one that installs on the Edge server, which is called the Security Edge Filter, and the other one is Security Web Filter, which installs on your reverse proxy. And it performs the not the authentication, but the validation aspects of that user authentication right at the DMZ. And so it basically looks at the number of attempts that are permitted, and if it passes the soft lockout threshold, it'll block it right at the perimeter. And in the Enterprise Edition version, there is a Security Filter Manager, which aggregates all that information and shares that lockout count across all instances of your security web filters and security edge filters. So this difference here is that now the authentications get blocked at the edge, and the nice effect of it is that your users internally do not get locked out because their accounts, the AD accounts, were not locked out. And it removes some of the effort that the internal Link servers have to go through in terms of doing the validation. So for in the case of Link Solutions for Link Mobile, what we offer is the security filters for mobile supports the Microsoft Authentication improvements. We have support for NTLM, so we can block on the NTLM. We can force external clients to only do TLS DSK. We'll have support for passive auth and providing multi-factor authentication. That's an upcoming feature. As a side effect, we're also the first partner of Microsoft to have done passive auth externally. In fact, the screenshots that François took, those were from our labs, and it's definitely a great place to go in terms of two-factor authentication if that is something that you need. So in terms of authentication mechanisms, there are two mechanisms that we're talking about for external authentication if you have to do two-factor authentication. So one possibility is doing Kerberos constrained delegation. That's a possibility. In terms of pros, it's easier, can be done faster, can be extended to exchange web services. In terms of cons, it's less secure. And the reason why is if the server that is enabled for Kerberos constrained delegation has full access to your Active Directory. So once you're able to take over to root that server, you basically can impersonate everybody inside your domain. So there is that concern there. The other option is to use passive authentication, as Francois was mentioning. So the pros in that sense is it's more secure. It only allows authentication of your linked users, period. So if you were trying to attempt to log in as an Exchange user or a SharePoint user to that passive auth authentication STS, it wouldn't be able to do that authentication. It wouldn't have those claims to be able to do it. And so it really restricts the authentication only to your linked servers. Clearly right now it's the Microsoft recommended path, and so we're following that process. And it's future-proof in the sense that as long as we're following Microsoft's standard recommended path, we'll be in good shape here. In terms of cons, it's a little bit heavier in the sense that there's more involvement in terms of deployment of it. It requires some additional tweaks from Microsoft, for example, support from EWS for passive authentication. And then it may take a little longer. It's not quite available yet, but it is what I believe to be the future of authentication, particularly in terms of two-factor authentication. So that is certainly the direction that Link Solutions is following. So we're opting for passive authentication, and we're aggressively working on building a custom solution for that, for those who require two-factor authentication. Did I go back or did I go forward? Oh, I did go forward. So in terms of customer asks, so what we've heard is some customer asks was pre-authentication and validation in DMZ. So Link Solutions, when you deploy our security filters, both on the reverse proxy and the edge server, it intercepts and validates all inbound authentication traffic. And I'll show that in a minute. It can be whether it be from the Link client, the Link mobile client, your dial-in URLs, Link web app, it'll authenticate, it'll verify all of those authentications. And it doesn't just look at the at specific elements that can be spoofed. It actually looks at the authentication aspects of it. There's the ability with the Enterprise Edition to restrict your devices. So there's the user device affinity, which allows verification of the device used by the user. And it can be combined with policies and alarming. So if a user that is usually signs in from a particular device, as say, for example, in my case, UC test R Maximo, but somebody were to get a hold of it, and maybe Francois were to authenticate with it, I could set up an alarm so that it would trigger to the administrator that there's a different user to authenticate with that particular device. Maybe it's not a big issue because maybe it's just a user that's another employee sharing that device, but it could be that possibility. And then we also have some additional unique capabilities. I won't go through it here for the sake of time, but also it's really NDA specific, and if it's something that you may be of interest to talk, I'm certainly welcome to talk to you about it after the session. So I think it's time for demos. We've done a lot of talking. What do you think, Francois?
I was asleep, sorry.
You were asleep. Perfect. Were everybody asleep as well?
What?
I guess so. So for the sake of trying to make this a little expedient, because the server is back in Seattle, I try to make sure everything is all set up. But as we know, we always have to make sure that the demo gods are happy. So the first thing I want to do is I'm going to show you here just me authenticating from an external Link client. So this is actually on my laptop. So you can see that this is live. So I'm going to authenticate as a user here. First thing I'm going to do first is I'm going to put in a wrong password. I'm just going to pretend I'm a hacker. So I'm just going to put something there, and I'm going to attempt to authenticate. It says I can't authenticate. And I'm going to go look at my reverse proxy over here, and I'm going to refresh. And you'll see here, there's an entry here that says, hey, Kelly Blue failed one login attempt. All right. I'm going to try again just to make sure that you guys don't think that I'm making this up. So again, the authentication failed. And I am going to refresh as well. And here we go. We see another authentication failed attempt. So it's logging directly at the reverse proxy, the authentication attempt. I'll show you as well, we have a console that will allow you to see it. So now I'm going to put in the right password. And it'll take a little bit of time to authenticate. Hopefully I did type it in properly. And we'll see some updates here. So yes, Kelly has been successfully logged in. It's taking a little bit longer here because it's downloading information, basically. But the authentication request has been performed, and the user has been authenticated. All right, great. So now I'm going to go to my dial-in page. So I'm going to authenticate here. We'll try Francois. And I put in the wrong password as well. So let's see if that is doing it. And yes, indeed. So there is Francois. He's got one failed attempt. And just for fun, I'm going to lock out Kelly Blue. So very easy to lock out a person remotely, right? All you need to know is their SIP URI, and you're basically done. So here we see there's a warning. It says one failed attempt. And by the way it works is so you may have three failed attempts or, you know, two failed attempts, but the moment you're successfully able to authenticate, it resets that count. So it resetted the count over here, and so I'm going to do it again, and my lockout count is three, basically. And you can see there is another attempt, two. And I'm just going to keep logging in. And I'm going to do just one more refresh here. And you can see that, oh, look. So three failed attempts, and the maximum login attempt has been reached. So my maximum attempt that I've set was three login attempts. So I'm going to do one more. And now I get a block. So now Kelly has been blocked right at the reverse proxy. So just to prove that that is still the case, let's log out off of here. And while that's doing that, I have an internal client. So this user, this client over here, is inside my corporate network. So I'm going to go in and log in as Kelly. And voila, I'm still logged in. So even though I'm locked out at the external, at the remote, I'm still able to log in internally. So that shows the scenario that we're talking about here. So there's a time here, and let's try this. So I'm going to type in the right password. And you can see that I'm still being blocked. Right? So the user is still being blocked right there. So I'm logged in internally, but I'm blocked externally. Okay, great. So I'm going to reset that user now. So I'm going to reset the user, and I'm going to log that user back on. And one thing I'm going to do is both on the Edge server, I'm going to change this value here from false to true. And I'm going to restart the security Edge filter. And over here, it's still trying to authenticate here. Oh, Kelly's still locked. Hold on a second. Is Kelly still there? No, should be okay. Ah, here we go. Wow, the demo gods are not good with me here today. Oh, no, it did successfully authenticate me, but for some particular reason, it's not doing it over there. Well, it's supposed to authenticate me there. Oh, I know the reason why. It's because I've already changed the setting on the Edge server so that this setting, which I was making the change on, it says change that setting from false to true. And what that does is it says block all external users from authenticating to my server unless they're joined, unless they're on a computer that is domain joined to my corporate network. So it's a corporate issued computer. And so even though I typed in the correct password, I still got blocked. Now, it got blocked on the edge server because I haven't done the change on the reverse proxy yet, but it was doing this, it was doing exactly that. It was performing that activity. And so I can certainly do it over here. But I need to stop the reverse proxy first and change that to true. This will take a few more minutes. So I'm just waiting for the reverse proxy to start back up. Please, question.
What are you going to do about them taking away TMD?
That's a great question. So when we released it, that was just shortly after Microsoft announced that they were discontinuing TMG, so we were very sad. But but our plans for this summer is to have a port of the security web filter for ARR. Yeah. So. Because that is a supported reverse proxy configuration for Link. So. So the question is, would we be looking into doing something with F5? Unfortunately, with F5, the only option there is to use iRules. Because we actually look at the authentication process, there's no ability to do that with the iRules. As far as we've investigated. So I know we're running out of time. This is trying to reconnect, and we can start maybe answering some questions.
Yeah, we should. We have about 5 minutes left, and I'd like to make sure that we have enough time for questions. I have some goodies as well. We have some Skype calls, and we have secret goodies. So
for questions.
But questions, if you want goodies, they require the microphone.
That's right.
No? Okay, questions without goodies. Yay, good.
All right.
Well, I actually have two questions.
You only still get one goodie, though.
Well, which client will be supported for passive authentication? You mentioned that the Link 13 client would be, and the iPhone client and the Windows Phone client, but not the Android client.
Well. That's the situation today, yeah? Okay. So the question is, because even though you are standing at the microphone, for some reason apparently it didn't work. But you still get the goodies. So the goodies you get are a Skype call and actually a busy light you see for Microsoft Link. You know, that very nice little white thing with a green light or red light, if you prefer. It also exists in yellow light. So which clients? We are not considering porting this authentication mechanism to Link 2010. We certainly want to extend it to as many clients as we can going forward, but not going backward.
Question number two. It says that passive authentication disable the integration to Exchange Web Services. That is only for external clients, right?
So the Exchange Web Services doesn't support passive authentication. So there is no, it's not really that passive authentication disables Exchange Web Services. You just would need NTLM to go to Exchange Web Services in parallel. Makes no sense to have one and not and the other at the same time. So typically what we would recommend if you use passive authentication is that you disable the Exchange Web Services capabilities on the client, the policy, it's a Link Mobile policy that applies to the client. Now when it comes to internal if you have Windows integrated authentication, you know, let's say you have domain joined machine, use WIA, that will be, am I saying something stupid here? That would be new. No. I believe that you would use WIA in that case, but to be verified. Yep. See, the goodies make people stand up.
There you go.
Yes, the conversation history today can be on or off on that device, and it's 100, that's all, there is no choice about having.
Is there a plan in the future to separate that out so that the mobile policy has a different conversation history?
You're asking a complicated question in a non-NDA setting. So everything that is there a plan, will something happen and so on, I cannot reply here, unfortunately. I'd be happy to have a separate setting discussion,
okay. But
not here.
So just really quick here, you can see that I'm no longer able to log in because I blocked remote access unless the user is domain joined on a computer that's domain joined.
So to your question, this is not something they could enable because the Link mobile client couldn't learn to do something that it cannot do. You know, eventually what you're asking is, could the Link mobile client honor a certificate that's on the device, and the third party doesn't have the ability to change that, yeah? So today it's not something that's built in, and you know, clearly we understand that there is that nice new feature called Workplace Join, but we don't use it today. And you get goodies too. Yeah, that's true. But I hear you better this way, I'm deaf. We're in sort of a gray area. So the question is, you know, our security guys want MDM, and they say this is the way to go and so on. Yeah? The mobile platforms are improving from a security point of view, and you know, I certainly hope that at least one of them is going to be pretty good very soon, which by then, hopefully most of those other things will be going by the west side. There's still the question of what you want to actively manage or not, and that's also part of what I think the platform will deliver rather than the MDM. To the extent the platform delivers it, it's much easier for us to use it. The problem with the MDMs is there's so many of them, and they all have a slightly different way to do things, and you know, you end up with massive fragmentation of your solution. So I think it will be in a much better position in a couple of years with platforms having much better manageability capabilities. In the interim, you know, I understand you'll have MDMs because of Exchange or email and all those other things. Link will not be distributed in that manner. So it will be outside of your container. If there is a container, it will, you know, it will be installed by the user from the store, like most applications.
So
in
I guess what's the Microsoft answer for, you know, I've lost the phone, what do I do now?
Oh, I've lost the phone, what do I do? I tell my admin, the admin is going to either revoke the certificate, disable the user. There are policies that can also be used if appropriate. And to the extent you feel we don't have enough policies there, let us know. We believe we have enough policies by what most customers tell us, but again, we're working on it. I'm sorry.
It's for all clients. It's for all clients.
Yeah. If the revocation.
If you revoke the certificate or you disable the remote user, it's for the user
because it's
not device specific.
Yeah, it's all the certificates for the user. Well, you get another busy light, and yours will be red all the time, I'm pretty sure. We are over time, so people who need to leave, we fully understand that. I apologize for being over time, but I'm happy to stay and keep more questions.
Thank you.